What?
I guess I didn't say you were nervous.
Yeah. But I am. Good evening. My name is Keith, and I'm an alcoholic. And, wow. 5 weeks ago, there was like 8 people here. So, I don't know. This is never easy for me. My sobriety date is July 15th, 2003. I don't say that to brag. I say that to let the newcomer know that it is possible to stay sober if you're committed. Stay sober one day at a time. Relapse is not a requirement. Of course, the book tells, people tell us to keep coming back, and the doors of AA will be open for you. My home group is the Wednesday Night Big Book Study Group. That's where I learned everything that I'm talking about up here. Nothing I say up here is original. It's not my stuff. It was at some point in my life, age 35, I got tired of being sick and tired. You know what I mean? And I've told my story lots of times in my 10 years plus in sobriety. And Rachel saw fit to ask me to do this at another place. And I wasn't going to do it. You know, I was thinking of all the ways not to do it. I got stuff to do. But somebody dear to me said I can't say no. That God asked her to speak to me and asked me to do it. So, you know, bear with me and thank you guys for showing up. You know, I'm not Peter, Russell, or anybody else of those circuit speaker people. Like you said, I have a heart for the newcomer because I believe that the message is being watered down. I believe that there's too many people dying on our watch. I'm not an expert of the big book. I'm a student of the big book. Like, I've been studying it for the last almost 11 years. So I'm going to give you my experience with that. You know, I'm going to hopefully try to incorporate my experience and how I work through the steps. Like, normally when I speak at a meeting, and it's not for 12 weeks, but it's for an hour, I give a little bit of the war story, and then I go through the step process, and then I'm done. That hour's over. Very easy to do. But to sit up here and talk to you for an hour about a step is difficult. But there's a lot of new people here, so that gives me a chance to recap what I've covered so far, which is pretty cool. So tonight we're on step 5, meaning we admitted to God, to ourselves, and another alcoholic that we're, admitted to God. Hold on, I'm having a... Right, the exact nature of our wrongs, yes. So the fifth step. But going back, before I get to this point, you know, there's some things I had to come to, some conclusions I had to come to. And in the big book, Bill spends like 5 chapters getting me prepared to understand what I'm going through. Because it's all about seeking this God of our understanding. And when I got here, I didn't want to hear the God thing. You know what I mean? I didn't want anything to do with God. I wanted the easiest off the way. I wanted the 90 and 90. I wanted the just don't drink and go to meeting type of deal. But the guys I got with weren't going to let me do that. And so growing up, I thought I knew what an alcoholic was. You know, if you're new in this room and you've never been to AA, you know, you might think you know what an alcoholic is. You know, anything like me, again, I'm watching TV growing up and I see Andy Griffith's show. I see that guy Otis letting himself in and out of the jail cell every week. He's an alcoholic. You know, I got an uncle back in Rochester who would drink gin, like he'd be drunk 24/7. He's an alcoholic. In my history, I started drinking when I was 15 and drinking and drugging. So for 20 years, you know, it wasn't always bad. Like when I started drinking and drugging, it was fun. You know what I mean? I graduated high school, went to the Marines, a lot of drinking there. It was fun. No consequences yet. But I didn't know I was steadily building up this allergy to alcohol. Like it was getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And so my consequences took me on geographical cures. You know, it had me arrested, DUIs, all this stuff. But I still don't think I have a problem. Right, until I get to Florida. And when I get to Florida, like I'm glad I wasn't down here in the 80s. I'd be dead right now, you know. From what I hear and what I've seen in the 80s, Florida, I'd have been dead the way I used to drink and drug. So, but when I got to Florida, you know, I got these preconceived ideas and these preconceived notions about life in general, you know what I mean? Like I wasn't responsible, you know, life was a party. That was all it was, you know. My thinking was so skewed that when I got out of the Marines and I came down here, like the only job I could have was in the restaurant business, like waiting tables. Because if you're an addict or alcoholic, that's the best job to have, being waiting tables. My guy would come meet me. I wouldn't have to go see him. Then it was on. You know, there was no drug test or none of that stuff. It was free for all. But God put angels in my life, you know. And you're going to hear about these angels as I do my story because again, I didn't believe in God, but as I've been told over these 10 years, I now know that it was God. And so I get with this lady. She helps me. She's a Christian. She takes me to this sober house. The sober house I go to, like, I don't know about any other part of the country, but Florida, there must be over 2,000 halfway houses down here. Like, 2,000 warehouses, we like to call them sometimes. And but I went to this place called Solutions, and it's Solutions, S-O-U-L, Solutions. And there, they're all about the book, right? And I don't know about the book when I get there. And all I know is I don't want to feel like I'm feeling. You know, people don't remember their last drunk or where they were. Like, I remember that. I keep it fresh. Like, at our meeting on Monday nights at the Sober House, we do this meditation where we have the guys close their eyes and we take them back to that last week out there. Like, where were you? What were you doing? Can you see it? I know exactly where I was. I was in a hotel room right off of 31st by the Turnpike. The Days Inn, you know. It wasn't like the Ritz or anything. It was a crack hotel, basically. And in that hotel room, you know, I said the prayer to God at the time, because I had said a lot of foxhole prayers in my journey. Like, out of my three DUIs, get me out of this last one, and I won't drink and drive again. That wasn't true, though. You know? So I said a lot of foxhole prayers, but here I am at the end. Like, I'm 35. The book talks about all your scorecards reading zero, and my scorecard read zero. And I'm in this hotel room, and my prayer was, Lord, please help me, or don't wake me up tomorrow morning, right? And suicide was, like, all the time in my head. Like, I want to kill myself, but I was too much of a coward to do that, you know? And so on the fifth day, Lorna comes back, and she gets me, and she takes me to this place. And then at this place, my life took a whole turn. Like, it hasn't been the same since. And so at this place, you know, we're about the big book. We're about the 12 and 12. On Monday nights, we have a 12 and 12 meeting. And on Wednesday night, we have a big book study. And so we're all about the book. And in the 12 and 12, it talks about, in the foreword, it says, AA's 12 steps are a set of principles, spiritual in nature, that if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and allow the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. And I don't know about you, but that wasn't my truth when I got here. I mean, they talk about the spiritual thing. Again, I don't know what they're talking about, but I want what that was saying. So in step one, you know, you hear people say, if you're new, and I'm speaking to the newcomer, I'm speaking to all of you, but I'm really speaking to the newcomer, to the people that don't know. Because, like I said, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And again, I'm not coming from a place of expertise or whatever. I talked about it last week. Me and Allie went to Philly a couple years ago. And, you know, a good friend of ours, he had like 30 years or 26 years, and he's from Philly, and he's like, you know, we're going to go get dinner and go to this great meeting. And we go to this meeting, and the guy speaking had 15 years. And so we walk in, you know, and at this time, I'm very judgmental of speakers. Peter Marinelli changed my thought process on that, but at the time, I'm very judgmental. And so we're sitting in this meeting, and this guy is sharing, and there's a whole bunch of newcomers like it is here now, a bunch of treatment centers and stuff. And the guy's telling his story, but there's nothing about recovery. He's talking about his college degree. He's talking about everything but sobriety. Then he had the nerve to say, yeah, I still think about suicide. And I looked at Allie like, what? This guy's 15 years sober. So now I'm shaking. And she sees me. She's like, babe, stop, stop. I'm like, no, man, this guy's killing me. So they get done. He gets done speaking, and they open it up for sharing. So we call it open disgusting meetings, but whatever. The first person who shared was a girl. She had 3 years sober. She just relapsed 2 days before this meeting, and the first thing she said was, thank you for talking about suicide. And I was incredulous, right? So now I'm just like itching, like, oh. The next guy, he sits behind us. He shares. He's got 29 years sober. And he's saying, thank you for talking about suicide. I was just thinking about suicide last week. And I lost it then, right? Because there's newcomers in there. And if I'm a newcomer and I hear somebody with 15 years sharing from the podium talking about suicide, and that's what I got to look forward to, I got a girl who's 3 years sober, and she's thanking the guy because she's thinking about suicide 2 days ago, and then you got a guy with almost 30 years talking about suicide, and I'm sitting there new. I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm going back to drink. I'm going back to get lit up. If I'm going to kill myself 29 years sober, I ain't getting sober. I'm going to go back to doing what I do. So she just nudges me. Go ahead and share. You know you want to share. And so I shot my hand up in the air, and the guy called on me, and I wasn't so nice about it. And I fired. You know, I'm like, you know, where I'm from, they got this thing called the Big Book, and I just laid it out for them. But I don't say that to brag. I'm just saying that that's the message that's going on out there. Like, if you don't know and you're new and you hear somebody with 29 years say they want to kill themselves, you're thinking that guy's an expert on recovery because he's got 29 years, you know. He could be a hard drinker, a dry drunk, because there are some hard drinkers in our fellowship, you know. I got 3 DUIs. I was told to go to treatment or whatever. And I believe there's a lot of hard drinkers in AA. Like, you know, you get some DUIs. Judge tells you to go to a meeting, get this paper signed. They come here. And they like the coffee. They like the girls. They like the donuts. And they stay. And then they start sponsoring people. And they're doing people a disservice with that. Because they're telling people, you don't need that book. You don't need that God. Just do your 90 and 90. Just don't drink and go to meetings. You'll be okay. Well, I'm going to talk about, you know, we find out in the book that drinking was but a symptom to this deal. You know, when I get here, I think it's, if I just stop drinking, my life will be good. And life gets better when you stop drinking and drugging. It just does automatically, you know. But my problem goes deeper than that. And that's where good sponsorship comes in. And so Bill spent a lot of time in the book hammering that home, like making sure I understood what my problem was, why I'm going to need to seek this God thing. You know, so in step one, he spent the doctor's opinion. He spent Bill's story. He spent more about alcoholism, and there's a solution because he knew me. And even after that, you know, when it says in step two, can't believe in the power of greater self can restore you to sanity, even though I know what step one is, and for you people that don't know what an alcoholic is, and if you get a doctor's opinion, it's in the Roman numerals. It's not in page one. So if you go to page one, you're not going to see doctor's opinion. You got to go back to the Roman numerals. It tells me I have an allergy to the body that when I drink, it sets off this physical demand for more alcohol. And that was my truth. It made sense to me. Like, I didn't have to go to a speaker meeting to hear my story. I didn't have to answer 100 questions in a pamphlet or none of that crap. I just married my past to that information. Did that live for me? When I went out on a Friday night and said I'm only going to spend $20, I'm only going to have a 20 if you're a crackhead or whatever. Did that live for you? Could I stop once I started? My truth was no. But that wasn't my problem. I have this thought in my head that says I don't have that problem. So that makes me powerless. It's not powerless over people, places, and things. You hear people into me a lot of times. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. That's crap. You're not. You have this thing in your head that tells you you don't have this problem. So that's my step one. I'm done. You know, got it crystal clear. Step two, I'm not believing the power greater than myself right now. The book doesn't tell me you have to believe right now. All you got to do is know that you can't solve this problem. That's all it's saying in step two. I got that crystal clear. You know what I mean? And then step three, talked about it a couple weeks ago and I talked about it last week. You know, in step three, I'm saying to myself, you know, in the book it talks about I'm turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. Again, I don't know what that is when I get here. I don't believe in God when I get here. For me, I was turning my will and my life over to the care of John W. and Joe B., you know, at the time. They were going to put my hands in God's hands. I trusted that they knew what they were talking about. And so I let them pretty much run the show for me. But it's much bigger than that. You know, as you get along in this program and you're here for a little bit, you know, step three becomes an integral part of the program. Because every morning I'm turning my will and my life over to him. Because if I don't do that, that means I'm taking over again. But in the beginning, if you're new, all you're doing is saying, I'm going to do the rest of the work, basically. You're saying, I'm going to do a four-step inventory. If that be the case, your sponsor, if he's a good sponsor, you guys do your third-step prayer, and you're writing a four-step inventory. Right then and there. You're not waiting. You know, it's not like, well, let's take it easy since you made that decision. And my decision, I made a lot of decisions in my life, but I never acted on it. They were good intentions, but never a decision. So I did this four-step inventory, and I talked about it last week, what it was. It's, no, it's not my life story. It's a category of my resentments, my fears, my harms, and my sexual harms, right? And it's outlined in the book. And we put these on paper. And in this four-step inventory, I'm going to find out who you got when I showed up on the scene, because I never took a look at myself when I got here. You know, before I got here, I never took a look at myself. It was your fault when my life sucked and while I was in the toilet. It was everybody else's fault when my life was in the toilet, you know? Again, talked about the DUIs and stuff and blaming it on the cops for pulling me over and coming down here and being homeless and all that stuff, you know, mommy and all that stuff. I was a victim. You know, a consummate victim when I got here. But the force of inventory let me see the truth. And I saw that I offered everything that happened in my life. Everything. And this is the first step, and this is the first action step in my recovery. Because for the first time, I know who people got when I showed up on the scene. I know who Keith really is now. And picture this. I haven't done anything. I haven't done anything to change that person. And there's four-step promises. I talked about them last week, but all I know is I know him better. I'm still the same scumbag as I was when I got here, right? So in the book, and I'm going to reference the book a lot because this is where the answers are. And a good friend of mine said, you know, he brought his book to check on and see what I'm saying is true. Like, I'm not making it up or something. Like, all my stuff is coming out of here. So here's a four-step promise. After I do this four-step inventory and I find out my character defects. And if you don't know what a character defect is, in the 12 and 12, they put it pretty simple. It's the seven deadly sins, the Pagels, we call it. Pride, anger, gluttony, greed, lust, envy, right? That was running me when I got here. That was my constitution. How It Works talks about constitution and capable of being honest with ourselves. Well, that was me. I was living a lie when I got here. And I thought I was a good guy and responsible and all that crap, but that wasn't the truth. The truth was Keith was a scumbag. My word meant nothing. I was late for everything. Irresponsible. Still wanting mom to pay the rent at 35. All these things, right? And that's why my life was in the toilet. So we find out this in the four-step inventory. Now, in the fifth step, it's talking about in the presence of God and my sponsor, I'm telling this man everything. I think that's where the whole life story thing got mixed up. I don't know if that happened in treatment or whatever, but this is where the life story is told. And in my fist up, you know, I told my sponsor everything. And I didn't have a white light experience like Bill W., you know what I mean? He had a white light experience, but this man that I chose to tell my fist up to was somebody who I wanted to hold me accountable, who I saw in something him that I wanted, and finally somebody was going to know who I was. Now, my fist up, and I hadn't committed murder or anything like that, but there was a lot of stuff I did wrong. You know what I mean? There was a lot of bad stuff I did, like the DUIs. Like, nobody knew when I got here. Like, I was at the Hope Halfway House for years. I was there for 3 years, a record at the time. But I wasn't just hanging out. But the whole time I'm there, I wasn't driving, and Joe knew something was up. You know, he knew that there's a reason why I wasn't getting my license, and I didn't tell anybody that. You know, the book talks about holding on to these secrets. Like, it's going to take me out. But, hold on, let me read it before I tell you that story. So I'm going to give you a little bit of mini fist up from up here, because it's my experience. So the fifth step. It says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude. Like, it's telling me right there, my attitude sucks when I get here, so I'm trying to get a new attitude. A new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We've admitted certain defects, those Pagels, seven deadly sins. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is, and we put our finger on weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part. See, the book is telling me, action, action. I just can't come in here and think I'm going to hang out and get sober. You know, I can't sit next to James because James got 6 years and think I'm going to get what he has by just coming to a meeting every day. You know, that whole 90 and 90 deal, that I hate when people say that. Because that's crap. You know, you can come to a meeting for 100 days, 120 days. That's just for an hour a day. What about the other 23 hours of the day? Right? What's living inside of my head for those other 23 hours? Fear, shame, remorse, guilt, fear of the past, fear of the future, all that crap. It ain't going to get solved by me coming here listening to you guys. So there's work to be done. So it says this. This requires action on our part, which when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step of the program of recovery. It says, this is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. How many times have we done that? I've done that a lot, you know. Sat there and self, I can't say that word, but you know what I mean. And nothing got done. So it says, there is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We'd be much more reconciled discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reason why we should do so. The best reason first. And here it is in a nutshell. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome our drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. So that's telling me right there how important this fifth step is. And in my experience with the fifth step, I did the fifth step when I was like 8 months sober, I'm at the sober house. 10 months in, Joe puts me in a plan to go back home to make my amends to my family. I did that. I told them everything, you know what I mean? I come back to Florida. I'm at the sober house for 2 more years. And when I say that, to let you know, like, I wasn't just hanging out at the sober house because I had nothing to do or better to go. Like, I got here with nothing. So as I'm getting sober, I'm starting to incorporate these new ideas into my mind. I'm starting to incorporate these new responsibilities. Like, if it's going to be, it's going to be up to God and me. I got to be responsible. I got to put some skin in the game, so to speak, right? So I'm at this halfway house, and my mom's paying my rent when I first get there. Like, every week she's sending Joe a check, and I'm like, this is good. I ain't got to go to work. I get to hang out. We had a pool, basketball court, everything. So I'm good. Joe says, no, it's time for you to go out and get a job. So my first job in recovery was labor pool for 6 months, making $42 an hour. I mean, $42 a day, I should say. Not an hour. If that was the case, I'd still be at the labor pool. But. No, but it was $42 a day. And by the time this happened, my rent was so high, I can't tell you how much it is, because Joe doesn't like me telling that, because we don't let people get that high anymore. Like, they got to go. But let's just say it was in the four figures. It's in the thousands. And, you know, so I would come home and I would give Joe 20, 22, and he'd let me keep 20. But you know what he said? He just said, you know what? He saw the willingness for me to go out there and do labor pool work for $42. Because a lot of us, I don't know about you, but I see it at my house all the time. A guy comes in with nothing, right? No job, no money, no car, nothing. And a guy comes by and says, hey, I need some guys to help do some work. No, that works beneath me. You know what I mean? That works beneath me. You got nothing, but you don't want to go out there and dig holes or whatever. But that wasn't my attitude, you know? Because when I got here, I was dying. I said I was willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So I had to get responsible. Like, Joe taught me this. He said this deal is a much bigger game than just not drinking and drugging, right? It's a much bigger deal than me just not drinking and drugging. And at the time, I didn't know what he was talking about. But he was instilling me these principles, like responsibility, right? So I did that for 6 months. And this is how God works it out, right? So I'm doing that for 6 months. I'm going to meetings at the 101 Club. And I see this guy who owns an AC business. And he sees me there every day. And so he said one day, like, you know, I need a laborer, so I'm going to pay you $8 an hour. I'm thinking, I'm big time now. I'm like, yeah, I'll do that. The job that I got, his office was right around the corner from the sober house, so I didn't have to catch a bus, I didn't have to have a car, I could walk to work every day. And I did that. I walked to work every morning, 6 in the morning, I'm walking. And he saw that. So I'm with that guy for 2 years. So my first sponsor, he got hired at this pool place, and he's like a manager now. So one morning I'm praying, and at this time I can see God working in my life. I don't know it's God, I just know life is getting better, right? And so I'm at this AC work, and I'm doing that for like a year and a half. And so the boss I have now, he gets his job as a manager at this pool place. So I'm praying one morning, because I started praying at the sober house. I roll out of bed onto my knees and say a quick little prayer. You know, I don't know how to pray. I just say, no, where I thought. I just say, thank you for waking me. Please keep me sober. Help another alcoholic. And that was it. So I'm praying this morning, and my cell phone goes off in the middle of my prayer. And I'm like, man, what do I do? And I'm like, it's 6 in the morning. Somebody, it's got to be important. Somebody call me. So I go, God, I'll be right back. All right? So I go, God, I'll be right back. It was my first sponsor. And he says to me, are you still doing this AC work? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, do you like it? I'm like, no, I hate it. Because I don't know what I'm doing. I'm up in attics, hitting my head on nails and stuff. Like, you don't have attics in Florida. You guys have crawl spaces or something down here. So he goes, come by my job after work and we want to interview. You know, we're going to give you $10 an hour. So now I'm really big time, right? From $42 a day to $8 an hour to $10 an hour. So I go see him, and I meet his boss. And his boss says, look, we're going to give you $11 an hour. I'm like, cool. This job is closer than the last job within walking distance, right? So I'm like, man, this God thing must be working out. I'm showing up. I'm participating in my recovery. I'm participating in my life, and he's rewarding me. That's what Joe is calling it. I'm just like, whatever. I'm good. You know what I mean? I'm still taking credit for this thing. So back to the fifth step. I still have that same job today, 10 years later, which is pretty cool. But anyway, So back to the fifth step. So I'm at the sober house, and Joe knows, you know, I'm 3 years in, and he looks at me one day, and he goes, it's time. And I said, what? Time for what? And he says, it's time to go take care of Georgia. And I don't know how he knew, but he knew there was a warrant for my arrest. And I talked about it last week. My past was dictating my future. And what that means is this. When I got out of jail in Georgia, I didn't get bailed out of jail. Like, they ROR'd me, released on your own recognizance. And when they did that, I dipped. Like, they let me go. They messed up, so I'm going. Gone. This was 1999 that happened. So me and three brothers get in the van, and we drive south, and we come to Florida. Like, this is God. Like, I know what it is today, but me and three brothers who, to this day, I don't know if they're dead or alive, but they're a part of my journey. We get in the van, and we drive south. And we end up in Fort Lauderdale, Seascape Motel commercial in A1A. It's not there anymore. So I got this warrant, right? And when I'm in Florida, I get arrested a couple times more. Possession of cocaine, charge out Dave and Buster's. They pull up my record. It's not a felony warrant, so they can't extradite me. But they tell me, you know you got a warrant. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? A warrant for what? What are you talking about? So I get let go for that. I'm in probation, but I don't go to probation down here. You know, Melanie May puts me on 18 months probation. I disappear from that. I go out to Cold Springs. I work. This is where I met Lorna. Cops come in to lunch. I'm thinking they're there for me, so I run out the back door. So every time a cop comes into the restaurant, or if I'm out chilling with my friends, or I'm at a meeting, and a cop comes, there's an alcoholic cop who's in AA, and he just comes to a meeting during his lunch break, I'm dipping out the back door. You know what I mean? So my past is dictating my future, but Joe, so he knew this, right? And he's like, it's time. And I'm like, it's time for what? It's time for you to get honest. I go, what are you talking about? He's like, it's time to take care of Georgia. So he was the first person I told about the warrant. And so I got a lawyer, and I talked about it last week. I went and turned myself in, and again, the book talks about going to any lengths. And where I'm from, we don't snitch. And we don't turn ourselves into the police. We just don't do that. And I did it, you know. 7 years later, I go to court, and I get in front of the judge with my lawyer, and the judge is like, where you been, Mr. Neal? Because it's 7 years later with this charge. And I told him, I had some more research and development due, Your Honor, and I went up there, and here's the thing about good sponsorship and all that. Like, we had our ducks in a row. Like, and we're going to talk about this later on down the line with the amends process, but I had my ducks in a row. And so I go to this judge, and I have, I got letters from AA. Like, I'm 4 years sober now. I got letters from my sponsor, my boss, who was in the program. He understood, so he told me my job's going to be waiting for me. Like, this is all the things that are happening. Like, normally you leave work, you miss work for 2 weeks. Especially you go to jail, that job ain't waiting for you. And so I go to jail. I come back here. You know, I had financial amends to make. All this stuff. And I'm telling this guy that all this stuff. But I'm feeling better about myself, right? Because for the first time, besides me, somebody really knows me. The principle behind the fist up, and there's principles I talked about incorporating these principles in our affairs. The principles behind step five is integrity. I didn't have that when I got here. So finally, I'm starting to acquire some of this stuff. So it talks about if we don't do this, we'll drink again. So it says, having persevered with the rest of the program, they wonder why they fell. You know, so they got talking about us when we get here, 1, 2, 3, and 4. But I'm going to not do the step five. I'm going to skip step five. It says, we think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory, all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. Imagine that. I can't mix something old with something new and get something new. That makes sense? Like, I come in here a scumbag, I come in here a liar, a thief, and a cheat. Just because I get sober, I still can't do those same things and think I'm going to be all right. So I'm mixing something old with something new. I'm going to do a demonstration next week and show you what I'm talking about. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they sold someone all their life story. There's that life story part. So I think that's where people get that from in the fourth step where you sit down and write a book. Not true. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. See if this fits for you, because it fit for me. When I got here, there were two conversations going on. He's very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. Again, when I got here, I was a performer. I could conform to any situation that I was in, right? I talked about this at Unity. If I was at a club, at a hip-hop club, I could be one of those people. If I was at a meeting, I could speak the lingo. If I was talking to somebody who's scholarly, I could speak that stuff. But it was all a fraud, you know what I mean? There was two conversations when I got here. There was an outer conversation, sounded something like this. Keith, how you doing? Great, life is good. But on the inside, I'm dying. So it was like this, nothing. It says, this is the one who likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, right? So it's all about my reputation when I get here. I'm giving you the power to give me how I feel about my reputation. That's crap, you know what I mean? Now my life today is, I don't care what you think about me. You know what I'm saying? What you see is what you get. Am I performing? Am I people pleasing? That's all due to the process and God of my understanding. Like before, I cared about what you guys thought about me. I cared about getting up here and sounding good. I don't. If you guys were at Unity, you would have saw something, and I talk about it, and I shouldn't keep talking about it, but to me, it blows me away because I froze up there in front of 200 people like this. Froze. Literally, like, it was bad. It was so bad. And but it taught me something, and it showed me how powerful my God is, because when I wanted to run, when fear crept back in and Keith wanted to take over and I wanted to tell Rachel and James I'm done with your step series and you got to get somebody else, God kicked back in. And I don't know what I said or how I said it, but from what I get from the feedback, people told me that was the realest thing they ever seen in their life, and that wasn't me, right? And I say that to say about this thing about the reputation. Now, mind you, in the past, that would have happened, and I'd have been like, man. Because we're known in the AA, especially down in Pompano, we're known in the AA down there. And before, it would have been like, man, Keith froze up there. Did you hear about Keith freezing up there? And I ain't never going back there, you know what I mean? But I didn't care, you know what I mean? It was like, okay, I'm sober. I didn't die. I made it. And, yeah, so my reputation precedes me, I guess, so to speak. But, yeah, no, that was just one of those things. And I say that to say this. We come in here actors. I come in here an actor. And it's all about the show and authenticity and performing and people pleasing. Like, my word mean nothing. Like, all that's crap, you know what I mean? And you see those people around here nowadays. You know, you see people who want to be the... There's a conversation going on, and they walk right up, and they just insert themselves into it. They got to always hear themselves talking. Like, they got to be the center of attention. You know, what is that? I'm like, who are you, dude? Like, I see them people, I'm just like, whatever, dude. But that's not the case today. It's not about my reputation. I'm a steward of a God of my understanding. So it says this. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. Now, I skipped something real quick. Going back to why we do this house cleaning and why 90-90 isn't going to work for you. If you're anything like me. So, the book tells me drinking is but a symptom, right? And here's why I do this fifth-step inventory, and this four-step inventory, and this fifth-step confession. Think about this and see if this fits for you, and if this was you and you got here. So on page 52 of the big book, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems, because we're going to need God to remove these character defects, these deadly sins, as I so to speak. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human frailties this readiness to change our point of view. So here it is. This was me. See if it fits for you. We were having trouble with our personal relationships. I didn't have any relationships when I got here. We couldn't control our emotional natures. Really? We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Like, all that stuff, right? That was me. Like, that was me when I got here. A living, breathing, human, walking garbage disposal, right? And I said it last week. In any description I've ever heard of a God, and this is about a God of your understanding, anytime I ask somebody about the God of their understanding, they never described him as something that can live in a garbage can. That was me. So it says, the inconsistencies made worse by these things he does on his sprees or his relapses. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might observe them. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension, and that makes for more drinking. So this is what I do when I get here. I just push all that crap inside, right? Another thing Joe taught me, because this happened in our house, is like, you know, and a newcomer might be confused when I say, I authored everything that happened in my life. Like, it's my fault when my life sucks, right? So if you're new, and there was a guy in our house who was new at the time, he had been molested as a child, right? Now, obviously he didn't ask to be molested. Obviously he didn't ask for that stuff to happen to him. And so, yeah, there's outside people and things that can help him with that. But what the problem was, or the way we broke it down for him, was what is the payoff for you still running that story 30 years later without seeking help, you know? And at first, I thought Joe was being a jerk about it. But he said, Keith, look, there's things out there that can help this person. He's running the story without seeking that help. So obviously he didn't ask to be molested, but he's getting a payoff from still running that story 30 years later. And I have motives for everything. When I do something, there's a motive behind it. But when I get here, what's my motive for doing this stuff? So the book talks about this in the fifth step. It says we must entirely be honest with somebody if we expect to live long and happily in this world, right? We're going for emotional sobriety. We're not going just for not drinking and drugging. That's what I was taught. I'm not here to just be 29 years sober and wanting to kill myself. Why would I want to do that? You know, why am I getting sober to feel that way? I'm not getting sober for the house, the car. I don't know how it works, but that stuff seems to come. But if you think this deal is just to get stuff back, you're missing the boat. To live long and happy is what it says. So, we talk about these things called the principles. And there's principles in each step. Well, a lot of the steps. And at a lot of the meetings, I talked about this last week, there's 9-step promises read. And those promises, it talks about when you're halfway through, you'll be amazed before you're halfway through. Well, they're talking about the 9-step and the amends process. But right now, in this 5th step, the promise we're talking about is like somebody knows me finally. I can go to bed, lay my head on the pillow, and know that they're not giving to a fraud, all this stuff. And here it is on page 75, the 5th step promises. It says, we pocket our pride and we go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step with holding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. That wasn't me when I got here. I was walking my head down. Like I was ashamed. It says we can be alone in that perfect peace and ease. Again, when I got here, I always had to be doing something. I always had to be on the go. I always had to be the life of the party, not alone in the peace and ease. Imagine this. Our fears fell from us. We began to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. Step 12 tells me, and this is a huge problem, promise of them all, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to care as much as other alcoholics. And right there in the 5th step is telling me I'm starting to have that spiritual experience. Like I'm starting to see what 12th step is talking about here in the 5th step. But I ain't done nothing yet, right? I haven't done anything to change. I just know I'm a little bit better, and now one other person knows me better. But nothing's changed. I'm still the same scumbag. But I'm still getting this kind of promise. Like the fear's gone. Somebody knows me. It says that feeling that the drink problem has disappeared. This is huge. In the 5th step. The feeling that that drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. So by this time, you're like 3 months sober, hopefully. 4 months sober if your sponsor's got you doing a deal. You ain't thought about a drink or a drug, whatever you do. You ain't thought about that. You ain't obsessing about it. That's amazing. Given who I was when I got here. Because for 20 years, I couldn't stop drinking and drugging. But here it's telling me in the 5th step, and I've done nothing to change. And the promise tells me right there. The drink problem has disappeared. It comes strongly. It says, we feel as though we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of our universe. That's amazing stuff. So now I do this 5th step inventory. And like I said, I don't go home. I don't have a white light experience. And I sit And the book gives us clear-cut directions. Like, see, that's the thing, too. Like, people come in here and they want to give their opinion about stuff. The book has it laid out for me perfectly, right? And I got with some people armed with the facts about themselves, and I trusted what this book is telling me. So I go home for an hour, like the book says, and I sit by myself with God, and I look at the first five proposals. Have I left anything out? Any stone unturned, right? And when I did my first fifth step, I did. And thank God I didn't drink. Because I had the warrant still. And I see it time and time again where guys come in and they want to hold on to the worst stock in trade. They want to remain the same. Like, they want to do what they've done when they got here. And they want to hold that secret in. The fifth step and the fourth step is not the boogeyman. Right? It is not. You hear people talking, you know, newcomers coming in, so if you're in treatment and the guy's been there 39 days and you just got there, you think that guy's an expert. You think he's experienced. He's a veteran. And he's telling you, don't do the four-step inventory. You don't have to do that. He's wrong. My four-step inventory is the blueprint for the rest of the work. My fifth-step inventory, or my fifth-step with my sponsor, I have to do that and do it thoroughly, so when old self starts showing up and this man sees that, he's gonna call me out on it. I talked about it last week. You can tell about a person, by the people he's hanging out with. You know, in my inner circle, we're all doing this deal. Every one of us. You know, I got like acquaintances that aren't doing the deal, and then I don't judge them, but I don't allow them in my inner circle. The cool thing about recovery is, like I said before, I'm not people pleasing. I have boundaries today. I have boundaries. And if you're not doing this deal, and then, because there's too many people dying on our watch. I had you guys do it last week. Raise your hand if you know somebody has died from this disease. And everybody's hand went up pretty much. That's what we're dealing with. We're not dealing with, you know, just keep coming back. Or, you know, it's going to, there, it's going to be all right. You know, too many people are like tapping people in the head and saying, there, it's going to be all right. I'm here to tell you it's not going to be all right. If you're new and you're just hanging out and not doing nothing and just remaining the same, it's not going to be all right. You're lucky if you do get back here, but people are dying. And I have people in my life that took a stand for me. And by that, I mean they didn't tap me in the head and say it's going to be all right. They held me accountable, and they still hold me accountable. They didn't care about stepping on my toes. They didn't care about hurting my feelings, because your feelings, you go to those feeling meeting. That's crap. Who cares how you feel? We can talk about that at Denny's after the meeting. Let's talk about how you get sober, how you stay sober. I'm very passionate about this thing because I've been given, you know, I've been blessed beyond measure. You know, I came in here. I didn't have a license. I would drive illegally. Before I got sober, I would drive illegally. After three DUIs, I come down for it. I'm still driving illegally with a beer in my lap and a little other stuff, illegal pharmaceuticals. You know, very selfish, self-centered, hammered. I could have killed somebody out there. You know, it didn't matter. It was all about me and me getting what I needed. But that's not the case today. You know, once I got into this deal and once I committed, like, and I don't want to get it twisted. Like when I got to the solutions, I was all in and I was doing a deal. No, for 6 months, I was hanging out. I was trying to get a girlfriend at the AA. You know what I mean? I was trying to do all the wrong things for 6 months. But once I did commit to this thing, I started acting appropriately. I started having people hold me accountable. So for the first 9 years of my sobriety, I didn't have a license. I didn't use that as an excuse. I didn't drive illegally, because I couldn't drive illegally and tell my sponsor, no, don't do that. You know what I mean? And in God's time, I got my license back the right way. Trials and tribulations, but I did it the right way. I had patience with it. I didn't blow up. I didn't have that attitude of, you know, it's my right to have a license. No, Keith, you messed that up when you decided to drive drunk three times. Today I have a license back. I don't have a lot of money. I'm not poor either, but you know what I mean? It's not about that. It's what I have today is God-given, obviously, but today I believe I do have integrity. Today I do have, I'm a man of my word today, you know? I'm not a scumbag. I don't do what I used to do. Like before when I got here, I pray on women, you know. They call that 13-stepping. I don't do that. I don't let my sponsees do that. You know, if they're not married, we have a, they don't get involved. Because this thing is all about commitment. Excuse me. This thing is all about sacrifice. And Joe would tell me things like sacrifice and legacy. Like, what's the legacy that you want to leave behind in the hearts and minds of other people? Who's going to be at my funeral when I first got here? He did that, and I was like, what the hell are you talking about? He's like, Keith, who's going to be at your funeral if you were to die today? When I first got here. No one. No one had been at my funeral because I was a scumbag. Today, I think there'll be a couple people there, right? So if you're new, listen. Is it easy? No. Does it take work? Yes. But if you're committed to this thing, you can live a life beyond your wildest dreams. I know somebody that is going back to school now, about to get a degree. 12 years later after the first time they went to college. We can do anything we want in this program. Anything. You have to ask yourself every day, what am I committed to having? What am I committed to doing today that's going to get me to have that vision I want? And it's there for all of us, you know what I mean? But some people don't want it. They want it the easier, softer way. They want to hand it to them. And then we're selling out on those people by not telling the truth. People in my inner circle and my sponsees, they get the truth. I don't brag about that. It's just how I was taught. And that's what I do. So next week we'll talk about step 6. Thank you very much.